Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast, our first one of 2024. I'm your host, Ashwin. I'm joined by Varun. Varun, Happy New Year. We were together just a few days ago. That's why we haven't released an episode in a little while. All of us have been traveling. But how are you doing? Back into kind of the normalcy of the new year?
Yeah, pretty much. Today is like the first Monday back. So it feels like today is when everything goes back to normal and routine. And yeah, It was great because we were together, but there was no test match to watch because by the time you reached, the match was over. So sometimes the best laid plans don't work out. But happy New Year to everyone.
Yeah, and thanks for those of you who are on YouTube. Thanks for everybody who's been such a loyal listener of the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. It's just great to see those of you who've been on this journey with us for a while, and we just love hearing from you and love having you. So thank you to everybody. Yeah, Varun, like you said, I was actually realizing today my time, being in North America, but yesterday your time, the match was still supposed to be going. And it feels like the second South Africa test has been done for so long. You flew home back to Singapore. I've flown back halfway across the world. Like, all of this has happened and the game was supposed to still be going on.
Yeah, so it was, the series was 1-1. The series, I think in totality, was less than 5 days. It left you wanting more because everyone wanted that third test. But we know that the South African board couldn't do it because of their South Africa T20 tournament. But overall, a bit weird because the second test, and we'll get into it, but the second test was the shortest test in the history of test cricket. And we should talk about things like the view on the pitch, what Rohit Sharma said. Let's talk about the overall India performance. But
yeah, shortest ever in terms of balls bowled is just we've had Ahmedabad tests. We've had a lot of stuff, a lot of coverage about poor pitches and this, that. But this one still blew me away. And the other thing I was going to say before we get into the specifics of the test is I live in a country where cricket is not the predominant sport. So I often have conversations with people and the questions are like, hey, why did they run back and forth? Or why did they play for 5 days and this and that? And the question that I've been asked recently as I've been talking about this more and more is, why on earth would anybody do two tests? It just doesn't make sense. Yes, you can have a draw. So you can, a two test series could be 0-0, 1-0, 1-1, or 2-0. But it just, two of the top teams in the world, I know you mentioned already South Africa couldn't do it or scheduling wouldn't allow, but now we're going to play five against England. I mean, I would rather have ended three against South Africa, three against England. And I know there's a lot more to it. But anyway, thoughts?
Yeah. The reality is the test cricket revenue comes from Australia, India, and England. So there's three countries. Everyone else is playing it. And that's why we do have to worry about the long-term view of this game, right? Because you've given up a test for SAT20 or SA20, whatever it's called. And that's just a sign of things to come. And South African Cricket Board has actually come on and they're feeling apologetic about both two things, right? One is not having a third test. The second is also not sending their A squad to New Zealand for the test series.
Very controversial, yeah.
And so it has been controversial, but I agree with you. They need to find a way to carve out this time and do three tests. And maybe ICC needs to step in and say you have to do a minimum. Like you have to have a schedule for minimum three tests. And if I recall, they played some ODIs as well.
Three ODIs, India won that 2-1, but again, irrelevant kind of at this
point. And there was no point of doing that. You could have converted those 3 to 5 days for the ODIs into the first test, right? So I agree, especially now with this whole World Test Championship table coming into play and finals and things like that, it's more relevant, right? That you need to have series that kind of are deciders and I just feel like if we had, you know, today we were starting that third test, the energy would have been very high.
Couldn't agree more. 1-1 going into a third test is very different to 1-1 saying, all right, great news. India won a test at Cape Town, which we've never done before. 6 attempts prior to this one, no wins. I think 4 losses and 2 draws. But yeah, so it's so huge and you should be celebrating it. But being a day and a half and it being no third test just takes a little bit of the zip out of it. But let's get into the cricket. That's what we know how to do best. That's what we love the most. Before we get into the specifics of the first game, and again, because we didn't do an episode last week, thanks to the holidays, we're going to talk both the tests. I want to first ask you just quickly about team selection, right? So not a huge amount of surprises, if you will, with Jaiswal and Rohit opened, Gill at one drop, Kohli, Shreyas, and Rahul rounding out the kind of batting order. I had called for Shreyas. He didn't have a great series, but I had called for him to get his chance. Then on the flip side, in the first test, the three players who played were Ashwin as a spinner instead of Jadeja, and Jadeja was apparently a little bit unfit. Shardul Thakur, to give you that number eight batting, and Prasidh, who did play too. So really, it's just Ashwin and Thakur. And then in the second test, Jadeja came back in, and we brought in Mukesh Kumar, a little bit more of a out-and-out bowler. Jadeja didn't bowl at all. Now, that's given the state of the test. Didn't really bat much. And
They're saving him for Ahmedabad, right? They need to rest for him. Because in Ahmedabad, none of the...
So you're going to play both Jadeja and Akshar in Ahmedabad. But kind of overall thoughts on selection, the choice to play Ash first, Shardul not being as effective, despite still being India's most successful bowler, in best spell, rather, at one point in South Africa. So overall thoughts?
Yeah, so let me start from the top. So I think you mentioned some of the highlights. So firstly, Jaiswal came in, and I was quite happy with that. I do see people like Jaiswal and Gaikwad being the future of Test cricket opening. So I think I'm okay with it. Jaiswal hasn't had a good outing. He needs to kind of settle in a bit more before he starts playing the shots. But it's too early because the second test, the pitch was so weird, he had no other way to play. So I was okay with that. Shubman Gill at three. Interesting move because DJ has always said he's going to bat at four, and it looks like that is now probably the way that it is going, right? The heir to the king. And so I think I like Shubman Gill at three. It's just the problem is if you look at the last 25 years of cricket, he's following Dravid and Pujara. So you don't necessarily know if he has that kind of game. But then to be fair, we don't even necessarily need to believe that number three needs to be a Dravid or Pujara type. So it's just mentally like getting ready for a Shubman Gill type attacking player at three. Shreyas Iyer at five. Now, I know you included him. I was okay with him. I wanted KL Rahul more, and because he was the only keeper, I was very happy with that. I think when Pant is ready, he can easily slot into a Shreyas Iyer's position. I also don't know where Vihari is. That was a question I was starting to ask, where the whole build-up for the last 5 years is that Vihari is going to take over from Pujara. Pujara has now left, and there has been no Vihari. So, quick thoughts on the batting lineup. On the bowling, it ended, man, at six down, you've got Ashwin walking in. And everyone talks about Ashwin being a batsman and stuff. It just felt weak to me. And I think slowly we're going to have to get used to the fact that Ashwin is probably not going to play overseas because he, as controversial statement again, but I didn't find him that.
I don't think it's that controversial, to be honest. I think he's a phenomenal bowler at home, and he doesn't give you the batting that Jadeja does. And I think it's fine now to say that.
So that's what it was. I think the guy who's just totally misplaced is Shardul, man. He's becoming in a situation where he's neither batting well nor bowling well. The odd 20 runs that he can contribute is not changing the game. In fact, if you look at the first innings, I think Shardul Thakur in 19 overs went for 101 runs.
Elgar was just taking him
right
out of the corners. Just absolutely.
Yeah, and that probably was the reason the game changed. So it's the all-rounder is invaluable, but when you don't have one, you should not be forced to play somebody who's average, in my
opinion. Yeah, very interesting. And I'll address a couple of things you mentioned, a couple of folks you mentioned. Vihari is actually playing Ranji right now. And I think he, if I'm not mistaken, just made a 50, made 51 for Andhra playing against Bengal. Chiteshwar Pujara, by the way, who you also mentioned, double century. His 17th first-class double century, the most globally. I think the second most is Sangakkara with 13.
Yeah, and keep in mind that Pujara over the last 10 years hasn't played enough. He has played first-class cricket, but he hasn't played enough because he's been playing for India.
So it's just mind-boggling. I mean, there's no question he's good enough, and we'll get into that later when we have our next tests and stuff against England, but there's no question he's good enough. It's more a question of, are you future-proofing or not? Because he could still, on the merit of his career, walk back into the side, at least for a man tournament in India, but it doesn't help us for the next 3 to 5 years. All right, let's get to the cricket. So India batted first. Not a great start by a top order. And that first innings of the first test was the KL Rahul show. Right? How great was that century? I mean, yes, we like to think in hyperbole a little bit as India cricket fans. That's just how we roll. But a lot of people are saying across most formats, this was probably his best knock. And managed to get us to 245 after at one point, I think we were 120 for six when Ash got out. I mean, just very scary scenes. Could have buckled for 145, 150. And he managed to get us to something respectable. Thoughts on that Rahul knock?
Yeah, I thought it was great. Like, this is KL Rahul 2.0, the middle order specialist, the guy who has enough awareness to understand that the only way he's going to keep his side in every squad is by playing in the middle order where India needs him. So not only does he have the awareness, he's also now executing. Over the last 3 months, I think he's done a fantastic job. He had to bat with the tail because in another situation, you would have had Jadeja after KL and some support. But he had to bat with the tail. He had to get the runs. In fact, he brought up his 100 with two sixes and then was the one who got out. But not sure if it's the best innings I've seen, like top 10, like Sunil Gavaskar was going crazy about.
Yeah, his
but
best, maybe.
It was one of best innings. And yeah, because around him, pretty much Kohli got 38. After that, nobody else really came close. So it was a knock that was very much needed. It was a knock that reminded me of all our South Africa tours in the last 20 years, where the top order goes cheaply, one guy fights in the middle, beyond that one lower middle, somebody really puts their hands up, and then the tail folds again. So feels like nothing new, but kudos to
Charles. Well summarized. I mean, really the rest of the test was the Dean Elgar show, right? His penultimate test. Markram didn't get runs. Keegan Peterson didn't get runs. Tony DeZorzi got a start, didn't get runs. Bettingham got a nice 50. But beyond that, 185 from Dean Elgar. I mean, just shows you why he is the character, the persona he is in South African test cricket. I mean, sad to see him go, and we'll talk about his final test in a minute. But South Africa got to 408. Bumrah looked pretty good, but nobody else really stood tall among the bowlers, to be honest. And then that India's chase couldn't even get, you know, I was worried at that point where I said, hey, how much do they needed 160 odd. I was worried that we'd lose by an innings. And we were with our dad, and he was like, you got to stop being negative. It'll be fine. And lo and behold, we ended up losing by an innings, right? Rohit got out in third over, I think. Jaiswal shortly after. And then Kohli put up a bit of a fight. But just let's talk finally about just the tail. Nothing happened. This was the example of where when Iyer got out, and then Rahul, Ash, Shardul, Bumrah, Siraj, all single digits. I mean, just buckled, right? At that point, our group text was something to behold, where it's like, India can't play in South Africa. Da, da, da. We were just losing our minds again, because it was also like a 2.5-day test, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not acceptable. Only two figures got to double digits, right? Gill and Kohli. So to me, completely not acceptable. I think losing my innings was terrible. We should have put up a bigger fight. The minute Elgar and Jansen got stuck in, you knew that the game is out, right? So out of our reach. So the other call out I just want to make was Marco Jansen, right? We're talking about Shardul Thakur and Hardik Pandya. I mean, this guy is a better bowler than both of them. And when he bats at 6 or 7, he's made 84 in a test match. So you just have to find ways to bring out these kind of players. But I think that partnership just took away the game, and India was never, we were never in it after that. I think we did miss out calling Rabada as well.
He was absolutely Rabada, fire. He was just,
I mean, he picked up 7 wickets in the game, and it was looking scary at one point. Like, you didn't want to face him if you were sitting in that
for India sure. Camp. First innings especially, he was unbelievable. Second innings, Nander Berger looked pretty good. It was interesting to see his confrontation with Virat. I don't know if you got a chance to see that, but he, you know, threatened to kind of throw the ball. Virat's not a guy who backs down. But then walking off at the end of the session, Virat kind of went and shook his hand. And it was great to see. That was kind of the epitome of test cricket for me and everything Virat brings to it, right? All right. Let's talk then about the second game. A lot more fun, a lot easier for us as Indian fans to talk about. But the second game starts. South Africa won the toss, actually, in Newlands at Cape Town. And kind of the ancient wisdom, not ancient, but the wisdom has been, if you win the toss at first, you have to get through an excruciatingly tough first session of play. You have to. Everybody's known that. AB de Villiers has said it. Anybody knows it. But if you get through that first session of play, then it starts to ease up batting-wise. And lo and behold, Mohammad Siraj, I think somebody told him it was a Sri Lanka match, because he shows up, picks up 6.
It definitely did.
And yeah, just talk us through that first innings and 55 all out. I mean, every time you looked up, it felt like another wicket had fallen.
Yeah, I couldn't keep up, honestly. I just couldn't keep up with the wickets, because every time we looked out, there was a wicket. I think every alternate over, there was a wicket, because this guy was on fire and Bumrah was supporting him very well. But that's the thing about Siraj. He just, every 4 to 6 weeks, he rocks up, pulls out a team for 50,
And he has a couple of quiet matches.
Doesn't show up. Yeah. And then just goes around doing his thing. And then again, suddenly 6 weeks. Like, it's happened three times in the last 4 months.
Six, from the Asia Cup. I mean, just wild kind of numbers.
Which is still, by the way, not the best.
Yes, I knew you were going to make up Shardul. I knew you were. Any opportunity to praise Shardul.
Yeah, but it was unbelievable. Like, I just don't know. He's just got this knack of, like, I feel like you should analyze what Siraj has done for the day before, like, he does. Chart.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, like what he's eaten, how much he's slept, who he's spoken with, and just replicate that every time, because this is unbelievable. To come out and do this three times in the last 4 months is something.
Absolutely. I mean, just absolutely incredible. Again, the big one being Dean Elgar, right? I walked in and said, Markram got out pretty quick. And the first thing I was saying is, that's all fine. Markram got out fairly quick in the first match too. If we can't get Dean Elgar, this match might be over. And we did get him. I mean, the top score in that innings was 15. Unbelievable from Bumrah as well. Mukesh Kumar picked up a couple near the end. I mean, just a tremendous bowling performance. And yet somehow, not the craziest thing to talk about. Is 55 all out is not the craziest thing to talk about. Or let me paint the scene for you. 55 all out. India's chasing their first opportunity to win in Cape Town. Jaiswal comes out, gets bowled by an absolute peach from Rabada again. Still pretty solid. Rohit starts consolidating. If I told you we went in chasing 55 all out, we were 153 for four, how would you react? It's pretty good, right? It's not great, but it's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, I would be easily looking at 275. Yeah. And looking to finish the match off with an innings defeat. Like, that's what my perspective.
And then what happened? What was the reality for our listeners who've been living under a rock and didn't get to see it? What happened?
Yeah, so let me quote the great Ravi Shastri.
He said,
anyone who went around the corner for a dump would have missed the entire innings. And why he says that is because after 153 for five, the fifth wicket fell, KL Rahul. We were 153 all out. We lost six wickets without adding a single run to the scoreboard.
In 11 balls.
That was just shocking. In 11 balls, which basically means less than every alternate ball we were getting out. And just shocking, like, you look at the tail, 0 of 2, 0 of 2, 0 of 1, 0 of 3, 0 of 0. I don't know. I was just shocked. And again, it talks to me a little bit about the tail is just too long. We've got to figure out some solution.
Yeah, I mean, DJ and I have joked before on the show, like when I think it was an episode you weren't on, but if somebody enterprising, some sort of coach creates an academy for fast bowling all-rounders and just focuses on that to create India, they will get fast-tracked into the team. You don't even need to be the best fast bowler all-rounder. You need to be a guy who can bat at eight even and bowl decently, and you'll walk into this team.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen.
It just doesn't. That's what I mean. Somebody needs to. Yeah.
Because since 1980, we've only
had two. But also, I the only reason I have some hope is because until 15 years, 10 years ago, we didn't even have quicks like this. And now we're churning out lots and lots of good quick bowlers. So my belief is if there's a concerted effort, there will be more quick bowling all-rounders. We're just not there yet. But yeah. Went from the potential to, like your point, 220, 230 run lead on a tough wicket to a 98 run lead. South Africa then came back. Markram played an absolutely brilliant knock. Absolutely brilliant. Again, made a phenomenal century as everybody
on that wicket
to get a century as everybody else was getting out. You know, again, phenomenal spell this time. A second 6-4 in the match, this time for Bumrah, who looked outstanding in this match too. And yeah, we know how it ended. India needed about 79-80 to win the test match. I loved, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but I loved that Jaiswal clearly came out with a mandate to try to just knock off 25-30 as fast as possible. And, you know, if he got out quickly, they would have slowed down. But I loved that when you're only chasing less than 100 runs, even getting 20 quick runs just takes the zip out of the bowling attack. So thoughts on that approach for the chase? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I also think there was no other choice. No? The pitch, let's talk about the pitch, right? It wasn't a terrible pitch and it wasn't a great pitch. Which brings me to the fact that it wasn't even in the middle. It was a bad wicket, but it wasn't a terrible wicket. I don't know if that makes sense.
Help me think about it then. a lot of people are criticizing the pitch. A lot of people are just saying the pitch was fine. Quick pit, test pitches should be supporting quick bowlers, but we've lost, T20 has meant we've lost our ability to bat, and we're not, nobody's grinding it out, and this, that. Where is your head at on that? Obviously, the truth is somewhere in the middle, right?
Yeah, I mean, in the first innings for both sides, you kind of felt like the bowling was very superior. By the time the second inning started, you realized this pitch is just doing all sorts of things, right? So I would be very surprised if a pitch like this gets even an average rating. It has to get a below average rating because it's finished in under 1.5 days. But again, it comes back to me saying, I don't necessarily think the pitch was terrible. I just don't think it was a good pitch. And that to me was like based on the second innings when South Africa got out for 176. Pretty much everyone was single digit or 10, 11. And then Jaiswal got out, Rohit Sharma got dropped very easy. Gill got out, Kohli got out. So technically we lost 4 wickets even in our chase of 70 or 80. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. Now, Rohit Sharma came out after and said something interesting, which is, I'm okay with this pitch. I'm okay to take it as a challenge. Just shut up about the India pitches there.
We're predictably 3 weeks away or whatever it is, 4 weeks away from a two-day, three-day match in Ahmedabad or whatever. I haven't even looked at where the England matches are. And then everybody's saying pitches are useless because it spins on day one. And the fact that off of a good length, the bounce was so variable, I'm 100% with you and I'm fully supportive of what Rohit said is, listen, just hold the same standard. Either say it's fine or say it's not, but don't do this crap where you say it's a fast bowling wicket, it's great, and spin bowling is not. It's just hold the same standard.
Exactly. And so we kind of hobbled and wobbled our way there. Like, we got there in the end. It ended up being a great win. I think last time, if I remember correctly, we had lost the series in South Africa, right? We were 1-1 and lost the third. So I wish there was a third because, I think we would have done well. No guarantee we would have won. But technically, our best performance in South Africa, along with a previous tie, I think, sometime during MS Dhoni's era. So overall, weird because not enough time to process what has happened because it was only under five days. Even contests always leave you kind of wanting more. But can't fault the team too much because they did come back. So a bit of a weird feeling.
I think that's a good summary. Like, it just didn't give you enough time to process is the reality of it. A pretty bad loss, a pretty large win. And that kind of wrapped up the India-South Africa series. Varun, we're going to take a very quick break. We'll come back, talk a little bit about the other stuff in the world of cricket, the women's game, Australia versus Pakistan, and then the squad that was just announced for India versus Afghanistan. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Before we go into the next topic, we got a great comment that came in the YouTube chat from Randomly Systematic that says, you take away 25% of batting prowess and add 25% of bowling prowess to Sourav Ganguly, and that's the all-rounder we're looking for. I was like, that's a pretty good summary. A slightly better bowler, a slightly worse batter. That would be a good number seven.
Yeah, I guess in that era, you had people who could bowl, right? You could just have bowlers as backup, so you could go with four.
I mean, at one point, Sachin, Sehwag, Raina, Ganguly, Raina maybe is not in the same team. Yuvraj all could bowl.
Yuvraj.
I mean, you just had all the options. Right. Let's talk, Varun, a little bit about some of the other stuff in the world of cricket. We won't have time to get into all of it, but the Australia-India women's series is going on right now. After a pretty disappointing kind of 3-0 loss in the ODIs, a great test win, 3-0 loss in the ODIs, pretty exciting to have won the first T20 by 9 wickets. Just a phenomenal win. And you don't see that often, but against a side like Australia. But yeah, 141 all out. And the Indian women chased it down in no time. Shefali Verma had a phenomenal knock. And Smriti finally got some runs under her belt. So that was good. But then this morning, I woke up pretty excited morning my time to watch the second T20. And not quite good enough. Not quite enough runs on the board. Some unfortunately controversial comments coming in from the skipper where she, you know, some are interpreting it as threw a young 21-year-old under the bus for not bowling a great 19th over, and that's not a great look. But hopefully, one more match to come. I think it's on Tuesday or Wednesday. So Tuesday. So it'll be great to see that final match of the series to wrap up what has been a good Australia women's tour of India. Let's talk a little bit about quickly about Australia versus Pakistan on the men's side. Have you been able to watch that? I mean, at the end of the day, not a great series for the Pakistan time side, right?
Yeah, not a great series when you look back, 3-0. But when you break it down, the first test was the thumping defeat, right? 360 runs. Australia really stamped their authority. And it's nothing new for subcontinent teams to go there and lose like this in that first test, right? Keep in mind, it's also at Perth. So at that point, you thought they're going to be blown away. But remember, they've got a new captain in Shan Masood. They've got some great new bowlers, like especially this guy, Jamal.
That's the bowling all-rounder we need. What an innings.
Dude, that was something else. So what I would say is, I think the 3-0 could have very easily been a 2-1 or a 2-0. And that to me would have reflected this a little more accurately. But Pakistan did fold. I mean, when you look at it, they've lost by 360, by 79, and by 8 wickets. So on paper, it doesn't look good. I would say, yeah, it's kind of a lot of young talent right now. And I think Mohammad Hafeez said this quite clearly, that we were looking at this from a talent perspective. In hindsight, we have seen now a few guys who we feel can put up that fight and play at this level and in Australia. So I think they would view it a little bit more positively than the 3-0, but it doesn't take away from that scoreline.
Yeah, I think well said. Yeah. I think the big news actually then beyond the test cricket itself was, and we've gotten to this rhythm now with big cricketers who know exactly when to time their announcements of retirement, get a little bit more game time, be in the news, get all the media coverage, get the guards of honor, get their kids to come out. And of course, if you haven't figured, I'm talking about the guy who almost hit the winning runs, fell just short of hitting the winning runs in the 3-0 series, David Warner. Now, he's still going to play in T20s. He still, interestingly, also raised his hand and said, I'm available for the 25 Champions Trophy, which is not a format I'm playing any matches until then. So a little bit odd, a little bit like what Stuart Broad did with ODIs, to be honest. But yeah, I guess, any thoughts on the culmination of David Warner's test career?
Yeah, so David Warner has been, like, he's just been so much. You don't even know where to go with this, right? He started as a T20 batsman. I remember in Delhi, Daredevil, Sehwag told him to play tests because he said kind of in T20s, you only have 4 overs of power play or something like that. And in tests, you've got 5 days of power play. And so he started this whole journey where he became this premier opener. I remember when Aiden was retiring, a lot of people had asked who's going to fill these boots. And since then, he's had and a career with so many ups and downs. But at the end of the day, he's been entertaining. He has been exciting. He has been controversial. And David Warner, to me, is actually one of the best in the business because I think he's held every trophy possible. Mm-hmm. Right from an IPL to a T20 World Cup, ODI World Cup, World Test Championship. And I'm sure a number of others. He's led sides. He's been banned. It's been such an eventful career. I'm glad he's not stopping T20 because I don't think I'm done with him, and he's Delhi, part of Delhi Capitals, so we will still see him. But good time to call on the retirement, and now throws up a huge dilemma on who's going to open, right? Because Steve Smith has apparently put up his hand but hasn't spoken to the team about it, just told the media about it. Just before this podcast started, Cameron Bancroft is putting his hand up for opening. All three were associated with
And Bancroft was interesting. If you read the way he articulated it, and this may have been quotes or comments taken out of context, but he basically was implying, I'm a specialist opener. So if they make a choice to put a non-specialist opener like a Steve Smith over me, that'll be disappointing. But basically, I'm not the decision maker. Let them make the call. I think that's fascinating, right? Because to your point, I didn't even put one and one together, but these are the three guys who got the bet.
Yeah, absolutely so.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, Warner wraps up with 10,000 plus T20 runs, and he's still playing T20s. More than 15,000 first class. Is that right? No, more than 11,000, excuse me, first class runs. I mean, 8,786 test runs, averaging 45 almost. So, phenomenal career. I think I can't sum it up better than you said. Lots of ups and downs. The visual of him, you know, in tears at the press conference will always kind of stand out. But then on the flip side, his century celebrations, he seems to get a vertical when he jumps almost as high as that of Cristiano Ronaldo, which is pretty fun to watch. So hopefully we'll see some more celebrations from him in Delhi colors. But yeah, 37 years old, probably a good time to call it is in the longer format.
Yeah, so great career to him. Like you said, knowing when to call time was important. And and as we start this new year, I just want to talk about that World Test Championship table, since we're talking Test before we talk T20. So as it stands today, Australia is in the top position with 56.25% of points won. India is second at 54.16. That second win in South Africa really, really helped. South Africa, New Zealand, Bangladesh all at 50%, and then Pakistan 36% after that. Now, why I'm calling this out is because India's home series hasn't started, and this number could go much higher. So you're going to have a situation where, you know, I think very high probability that India once again qualifies for this championship.
From a World Test Championship standpoint, the one match in Cape Town was absolutely critical because you tied the series, you got one game overseas under your belt. It was great. So.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking then of some of the news from the Indian camp, the big news that come out, and we'll wrap up today's episode talking about the squad that has just been announced for the T20s against Afghanistan. So kind of the big notable absences, I won't go through the whole squad, but Hardik and Suryakumar Yadav have been ruled out with injury. And Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli are back in the fray. Rohit will be captaining. Kohli's in the squad. I mean, as I go through some of the other quick news, no Kishan, no Gaikwad. We maintain Jitesh Sharma, brought back in Sanju Samson. Shivam Dubey gets a spot. Washington Sundar keeps his spot. So let's start with the big ones, Virat and Rohit. Varun, what is your take? Social media seems a little bit polarized, if you will, behind the selections. But I'd love your point of view on it, and I'll share mine.
Yeah, so here's my perspective, right? India needs a captain. I think after that whole, the Hardik Pandya Mumbai Indians move has been generated so much negative news that people are actually now happy to see Rohit back as captain. I think I'm happy with Rohit being captain. The thing for me is, by both of them being included, they've both clearly put up their hand and said, we are available. Otherwise, in what world are you going to see India, like Kohli and Rohit, playing Afghanistan T20 series at home in India, right? It's not happened for the last 2 years. These guys missed these kind of tours. So they have put their hand up. They won one last swan song together. I think if they're in the squad, they're going to play. I don't think you make Virat Kohli sit out for, you know, Jaiswal or Tilak Varma type of person, right? So the rumor that I heard, and I've been reading online now, I might be reading trash, but the rumor I read is that BCCI selection committee actually, you know, feels that only one of them should play. So I don't know how it's going to work, because Rohit is captain. You can't then, so Kohli has to sit out. But Kohli's put his hand up, Kohli's been selected. So I'm very curious.
Yeah, the last time we played a T20 multi-nation tournament, Kohli was unbelievable, right? So it just seems like okay.
And I don't think these guys have played too many non-multination T20 tournaments in the last 1 or 2 years. So it then comes down to me a little bit around the fact that you've got Gill and Jaiswal. So how are you going to slot both of them in, right? Both are openers. So that's one big factor. And, you know, Gill is always going to win. So I hope there's some clarity there. The notable omission for me was KL Rahul, right? So he's keeper. He said, I'm willing to do a middle order in T20, but India has kept him out. Now, I am okay with that, because there's, as much as I like KL Rahul in the last few months, I think you can't have everyone playing the same way. And if you think about it, once Sky and Pandya are back, then you've essentially got the same squad as the ODI World Cup. Now, a lot of people are saying there's nothing wrong with it. There isn't. Absolutely, we had a phenomenal World Cup, but something's got to change. And so I do think that people like Rinku Singh and Tilak Varma and Jitesh Sharma should get a shot. I'm excited to see them. Shivam Dubey was a surprise addition to me.
Are they looking at him as that, not for tests, but in this format of fast bowling all-rounder? Like, is that the...
Yeah, but has he stopped bowling? Like, when was the last time he bowled? Even Dhoni doesn't use him. So I thought, Shivam, you're going to get the best out of Shivam Dubey by Dhoni using him as a bowler and setting him up for India. Dhoni has used him very well. It's just that he saw his strength in the Yuvraj Singh type of batting and has molded him there. So Those were the only call-outs. I do like the look of Rinku Singh and Jitesh Sharma at the end. If you're trying to solve the problem of not being able to finish matches, that cool, calm head. So, yeah, it'll just be... I think the biggest one for me is just Gil and Jaiswal. How are they going to fit in? Because in this squad, that's the only...
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think the only other question I'll ask you then is there seems like there's a... There's some sort of a discourse online, or and Joy Bhattacharya, the former or current, I guess, Cricket Info writer, and you know, a pretty well known name within cricket journalism, has basically said something to the effect of, I'm reading his tweet out, I think people are reading the India selection for the Afghanistan series wrong. Rohit and Virat interested in playing T20? Question mark. Fine, no favors. Here is a chance against Afghanistan to show us the role you want to play in, or how you can contribute to the T20 World Cup campaign. If you can, great. If you can't, there are others. If veterans of the levels of the quality and quality of Rohit and Virat have put their hands, you have to try them. I love that they're ready to compete. Your thoughts on that? Do we have the culture where if they, let's say they both have a mediocre series, does that then say they don't get selected for the World Cup? Or does that make it easier for us, honestly? Because then we say, hey, we gave it a shot and they had a bad series.
I don't. So it's a very interesting. I don't think this one bad series is going to say that, oh, now Kohli can't play because he didn't do well in this, right? I think the losing this, just to me, is going to be Kohli, because if Rohit Sharma is captain, he has to play. And I kind of see it. Like, why would you play both these guys in a T20? I can see that perspective as well. Although I think you still can play both. But I think Kohli's just going to lose out, man. I don't see a world in which both of them are playing. Because Gil technically should be batting at 3, right, in a T20.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. You're just going to have the problem of how you fit them in. Right, is then you Jaiswal, then you go to the Tilak was a bit of a surprise pick for me, to be honest. Then when Sky and Hardik are back and back, and the Rinkus and the Jitesh's, and then Sanju and all this, is where does the Sanju substitute slotted if you have Virat and Rohit available? So it's a problem of plenty a little bit. What do we have? 3 T20s against Afghanistan to try to figure it out, and then of course, presumably, the final decision making for the World Cup will be the IPL. So all of these guys who want to find a slot in will be gunning to have a phenomenal IPL right before the T20 World Cup kicks off. Right, Varun, we covered a lot. This has been fun. It's been good to get back kind of into the rhythm. By the time we talk next, we'll have at least one, probably two of the T20s against Afghanistan done. And then we get to get in back into test match mode, just the seesaw is swinging, but get back into it with England and 5 tests, as we said. So thank you to everybody who joined us. It's a little bit of a weird time as we were figuring out our New Year schedules, etc. We will obviously, this will be available wherever you get podcasts as well. Send us in your messages at One Tip One Hand on all the social media platforms. Leave us a comment on YouTube. We'd love to hear from you. We will be back next week to talk about how Virat and Rohit are doing if they play in the Afghanistan series, and a lot more to come from the world of Test cricket. This has been the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. Thank you for joining us.